You are listening to the Paper Player Podcast. I'm your host, Tony, and I'm joined with my co-hosts, Jeff and Josh. JB will not be joining us this week due to unforeseen circumstances. But Josh, how did you do any pre-releases this week?
I did not play any Magic this weekend. Womp womp.
All right, enough of you. And then right to Jeff. Did you play any pre-releases?
I actually did three this weekend. I did one on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Friday went 3-1. Saturday was 2-1, and then Sunday was a terrible 2-3.
Pretty brutal. Did you open anything awesome?
I opened TMAT three different times, three different versions. I got the full art non-foil, regular non-foil, and then foil stamped. I did open a Demi Lich, which I was really excited for because I definitely want to get I got my playset over the weekend, which was nice too. What else did I open? I opened a full art Lolth. Pretty much like anything I opened that wasn't going to be played in Modern, I kind of got rid of in trades this weekend for like Demi Liches and stuff and Treasure Vaults. So it was a pretty good weekend for his trades and opening stuff. How about yourself?
I just got to play in the one case flight that was on Sunday, which after Swiss, I was in first place, but then I got destroyed in the top eight. I actually played really bad.
I thought you weren't one to play bad.
And sometimes you just let it get the best of you. I definitely didn't size up my opponent correctly. You ever get into that trap where you feel that your opponent's not good at Magic, so then you play a lot looser, and then they just get you out of left field?
That's what happened to me in round five.
I've definitely just gone into games playing more loose than I should with, the circumstances of whatever I'm playing Magic for.
And when it seems like I have a habit of when I'm playing, I play to my opponent's level, if you will. So, if I know, at a tournament, like a SCG level, I'm serious the whole time and I'm pretty cutthroat. But when it comes to FNM level events, depending on what I think my opponent's level is, 1 through 10, 10 being pro, 1 being new to Magic, I will adjust my play style to that, which is actually a fault of my game.
Right.
It happens to the best of us. I definitely know I'm weirdly enough, the opposite. If I start doing really good at a tournament, I tend to get nervous. I start to think maybe I'm just getting lucky. Maybe my deck's not good enough. But I've definitely sat down at a table, looked at my opponent, and been like, they don't know how to play Magic. And, make play mistakes, overcommit to the board, and then just get blown out by, the one of that they have.
Yeah, making the mistakes is, something I definitely got to fix. And that maybe just that might be due to, COVID. Because obviously on MTGO, when I'm playing online Magic, I'm always one way because I can't see my opponent. But I just got to change up. The rare I had was the blue-black mythic, the 5-6 Gorgon. Yeah, the Beholder. I cast him zero times.
Oh, no, I had that happen. In the first conspiracy, I opened the big mythic dragon in my seal, or draft. Pack one, pick one, opened the big mythic dragon and never cast it in all draft. I was so mad.
Yeah, that was a 3-round draft?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I played 6 rounds with it and I didn't even have it in my hand once.
Oh my gosh, that is upsetting.
I mean, I was still winning games, but I was hyping that card up so much because I have played against it and it demolished me on Arena. But I was man, I can't wait to just destroy them, and then just never got the chance to. But, I had to beat them with my commons and uncommons.
That's the way to do it.
That card locks people out of the game.
All right, guys, so the topic that we're going to be talking about today is going to be primarily focusing on the Modern metagame right now. I think the best deck, I would have to assume, is the Hammer Time deck, the mono white one. But that deck, though it's currently best in the meta, it's only doing it's only 3% of the actual meta. But then we actually have the large, which I think is a problem as of right now, which is the blue-red kind of era of Modern.
Is the deck you're talking about, the mono white one, is that more the pure steel right too, right?
I see. Yeah, it does. It runs pure steel, colossal hammer, Sigarda's Aid.
I see 9%, so a little bigger than 3%.
Okay, the last time I looked, it definitely spiked then. I think it's a good counter to the Murktide deck.
For the last 2 weeks at least. And then I see blue-red aggro at 18% right now.
That's a big difference.
Right.
It's literally double.
Is that blue-red aggro 18% because it's the best deck, or is that just because literally every single Magic player is I'm a blue-red player. I want to play the flashy blue-red cards.
I think it's more the availability of the cards, because the blue, a lot of the blue red deck is like new and recent, and the white equipment deck has a lot of older cards. Like, what's that one white card where it's like an attached equipment and it's like $40 because it's only from like original Mirrodin? Like, how many people actually have a playset of that card?
Talking about Magnetic Theft, or are you talking about Sigara's Aid?
No, it's a like common or uncommon, or maybe it's search for an equipment. I can't remember.
Yeah, that's what he's talking about. He's
talking
about Steel Shaper's Gift. That's what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I don't think it actually plays that, does it?
The last time I looked, it did. It might not anymore.
I think it's on the Urza Saga plan.
Oh, it's 100% on the Urza Saga plan, just because you can go get the Colossal Hammer for one mana. But
I've got a single Steel Shaper's Gift in this list that I just pulled up. I assume they're all pretty similar.
Oh, Stoneforge has spiked. I think Stoneforge is up to like $60 right now.
Don't ever sell your Magic cards, kids.
Agreed.
So I think the reason why that 18% is so high is because there's three variants of the deck. Two of them play similar. The one other one, which is just like Blue Red Prowess, plays much more differently. That's more of a Swift Spear plan. But the Blue Red Delver that we're seeing now, the Blue Red list that are the similar ones. One's a Delver list and one's more of a Roggevant list. Usually they don't play play 16 creatures. They usually cap out at either 12 to 14. And then the Prowess list is just a Prowess deck that has happened to play. It got to upgrade with Dragon Raid Channeler.
I don't think any of the blue red cards themselves are the problem. I think the card that pulls it all together is the Mishra Bauble. They may have like got a little ambitious with like Dragon's Raid Channeler and his Delirium ability, but I don't really think. I think the free artifact that goes straight to the graveyard essentially is the problem and draws a card. Free cantrips, free spells in general are just pretty toxic.
And it gives you information because you get to look at the top card. You can either choose yourself or your opponent, so you can actually see if your Delver is going to flip or not. In the Delver variant, it turns on Dragon Rage Chandler. It's a card that can be dealt for Murktide. Granted, it doesn't pump it when it dealt, but it's free, so that's just put in your graveyard.
Are we running into one of those cases where, like, a card, let's go back to, like, Mox Opal. That is one of those cards that was pretty harmless in Modern in its first go-around, and that's because we had, like, a different rules. Remember the old Legend rule where if you played a Mox Opal, everyone that you drew from there on out was dead, and then if you played a second one, they would both destroy, or if your opponent played one, they would destroy it, and then they went to a new version of it where you could float the one mana from the one that's already on the battlefield, then you play it, and then you essentially get to sack the old one and get a second Mox, and that kind of really advanced that game. And then also new cards coming out really pushed it beyond where it's like what we know of what like Mishra's Bauble is doing today. If we look at like what Mishra's Bauble is, if you go back to like a metagame from like 7 years ago, we don't really see that card, and then now it's just absolutely everywhere.
You see, it's 30. The most played cards in Modern go 39% Lightning Bolt, 35% Steam Vents, 34% Scalding Tarn, 27% Wooded Foothills, and then at number 5, 27% Mishra's Bauble.
Pretty high number. I remember like a couple years ago only seeing that card in Death Shadow decks because like it was a way for them to like peer it with it against information, draw cards, whatnot. But like it being in every deck almost now, I think is a problem. I mean, which is hard to say because, like, I mean, Bolt is the number one played card, so I'm not saying we should ban Bolt, but Bolt also costs a mana and literally only deals 3 damage. This card is free, turns on your Delirium, it looks at a top card, it draws a card, it does so much for no mana.
Right.
Weird with Bolt. So if we go back, I know, to like Uro, when that was legal, Bolt was unplayable. You didn't see any copies of it, and it's because the whole format was dominated by a 6/6 giant. And then now, when the format's gotten really low with Dragon Rage Channeler, Roggevant, Delver of Secrets, Hell's Pure Steel Paladin, other different forms of affinity, and even sometimes you can get lucky, even the Urza Saga's like constructs, you can kill them with Bolt. Whereas you go back 6 months ago, or a year ago, if you will, I mean, you're not seeing Bolt anywhere. That was like almost, it was almost pushed out of the format, kind of like what we're seeing with Path to Exile right now.
I think the reason Lightning Bolt is so high is because you have to be fast right now, and because of like the efficiency you're getting with Mishra's Bauble and stuff like that.
And it's a one mana removal spell for like a bunch of creatures in the format currently.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't give your opponent anything.
You have to answer the turn one Roggevant right now. I also don't think Roggevant's bannable. even after playing it. It feels good when you get in with it, but it definitely does not feel like a bannable card. You can definitely answer it and get it to stop. Like, if you can't kill a 2/1, then you're, you know.
I mean, you can say that about any card, though.
Right.
Oh, well, I mean, if we go, like, let's go back a couple weeks where everybody's like, Urza Saga is the big, big bad, and that clearly got handled, and that was a beautiful thing, because it's just something that the format handled itself. People started playing 6 sideboard cards, such as, like, Hercule's Recall, Fracturing Gust, all these blowout cards. So when you go all in on this, like, Urza strategy, there are cards that are so cheap and that just completely blow you out. So it's forcing the metagame to change. Whereas with this Blue-Red Prowess deck, the volume's really high. And yes, I think the Hammer Time deck is, like, the counter to it. But all it's going to take is a few of those decks just main decking a Braid, and they're right back on top.
Yeah, Braid does take care of that Stoneforge deck pretty well. Also, like, Shatterspree is becoming more and more popular. Like, that card has risen in price. Artifact removal in general has gone up. That's why I hate the argument that, like, oh, a card's fine if you just play, like, an answer to it. Like, yes, this is true. Like, well, if you have problems with Mistress Bauble, just play Stony Silence. It stops it, but that doesn't work. Like, that, the format shouldn't be warped to the point where you always have to run these sideboard cards and almost have to run the main to deal with stuff.
I don't think you can't abrade a Mistress Bauble. That's a bad idea.
No, agreed. That's not what I'm saying specifically for that card, but, like, abrade and stuff like that is an answer to the Stoneforge deck. Is what we were saying.
No, I understand. I like understood that.
That's why, yeah, Braid is what the Delver decks can just start slotting in. I'm sure if you look at a few lists, they probably have 1 to 2 main deck and definitely some more out of the sideboard just to handle the Colossal Hammer. It can kill the Stoneforge, the Colossal Hammer, the Piercedale Paladin. So it kind of has all of it covered.
I think I personally was playing 2 Braids and 2 Smash to Smithereens.
Yeah, with blue red. So I guess my question is this ever not going to be one of the top decks? And what I mean by top deck is week after week, like, this is the deck you should be taking to the SCG. And if we go what a metagame should look like is, like, 1 week blue, like, let's go out of, like, modern for a little bit and look at, like, what a standard metagame is. Like, this week, mono black is good. Next week, red is good. Next week after that, green white is good. Next week after that, it's blue white. So it's constantly shifting. Whereas right now, I don't see that shift. I see a small shift, maybe to the Colossal Hammer, but the other decks are already so geared towards beating these Delver decks. I think that's why that deck's kind of getting away with it. And then once the decks go shifting back to the Colossal Hammer, immediately the blue-red variants will go right back on top.
Or, like, a good combo deck comes out.
Yeah, but that's also not a great answer either, because then how do you deal with combo decks?
Well, the control. There's plenty of good control cards.
Like, yeah, I mean, Force of Negation is probably, like, an all-time low right now.
Right. I'm waiting for Innistrad to bring a dumb combo. There is innovation in the modern format yet to be found. And I feel like the blue-red deck is just the easiest deck for people to go to right now. It's leave left, like, oh, I can get all of these cards. It's all printed in the last 18 months besides the lands. I feel like it's just flavor of the month right now. I mean, like, it'll always be a top deck. And I don't think there's, like, anything you can do about it, because Wizard's going to keep pumping out cool, flashy blue-red cards because that's what the people want. I would say an overwhelming majority of Magic players would say that blue-red is their favorite guild or whatever. If you were to go back to Return to Ravnica, even, I'm sure the stats would back that up. So, like, you're still going to continue to see this. And you're, like I just said, all these cards were printed in the last 18 months. Like, it's not going to stop. And I don't think any one of the creatures, like, getting rid of them would do anything. Another card would just fill in.
Yeah, I mean, if we were to get rid of Dragon Rage Channeler, you're probably just, everybody's just going to be on straight Ragavan list. Or, well, the Swift Spirit list kind of get a little bit worse. But I think Ragavan is, like, what everybody would play.
And I'm playing Sprite Dragon. I'm loving it.
That card spiked in price for sure, too. I mean, it's right. like $5 now, but that card's definitely cute. I went and picked up Clouts just in case I want to get on that list, just because I think the Clout of the Eventide enchantment that gives it +1/+1 haste and +1/+1 in Shroud, or that's whatever. True. If it's blue, it gets Shroud. If it's red, it gets whatever, and then it gets +1/+1. So you can make your Sprite Dragon, like, out of control.
It's already out of the control. Like, I turned forward the Amulet Titan player, and he was like, wow, how did you do that? I guess he did dismember my Ragavan on turn one, but it still felt pretty good.
Are you on a Metamorphos list?
No. I'm playing Lava Darts and Mishra's Baubles, Expressive Iterations, and Unholy Heat, and what, Forked Bolt. I'm playing a lot of removal. A lot of little diddly removal, because everything, the format right now is very low to the ground.
It's just a consequence of prowess and not what was the Strixhaven and Magecraft? Should just all of it just be like going forward, just be Magecraft?
What do you mean by that?
Where it triggers off of cast and copy instead of just cast.
A little bit different. So with prowess, that triggers off of planeswalkers artifacts. Oh, yeah. Magecraft is sorcery and instant only. Well, I think it's like a fixed version of prowess, because prowess, I think prowess was intended. So we like the inception of prowess kind of comes from, I mean, there was cards in the past that essentially had prowess, but that weren't prowess. But it comes from the Khans of Tarkir guild, which is the Jeskai guild. Mm-hmm. And they were like all about spells on the stack and not so much about like planeswalkers. But the way that prowess is worded is non-creature spell.
Right. I think I remember playing Monastery Mentor and realizing it triggered off of my Oko and all that. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is so good. I think that wouldn't be a bad idea to have Magecraft being it going forward. I would still like to see prowess though in like modern Horizon 2 style sets though. I don't want to see it disappear.
We kind of got it with Dragon Rage Channeler, right? Like it's surveil triggers off of non-creature spells, which like from a thematic standpoint, or me like looking at it from like a game design standpoint, why does an artifact coming into play get it to summon its powers? It would be like throw like a lightning bolt, it's getting the energy, whatever. I don't know. Just what I'm trying to explain here is just the how it looks like from a game design standpoint. It should just always be instants and sorceries, a wizard using its spell, you know? And I know you are the planeswalker, you are the one wielding the cards and such. When it triggers off like a Teferi, that doesn't make any sense to me like thematically.
No, I get your flavor. Back up. I get you. I feel you.
I agree. Prowess is too broad with like what triggers it. I do like Magecraft a lot better. Magecraft is even different than just strictly instants and sorceries because it counts copies, which we've never had before. Normally, like cards like that always trigger off you casting an instant or sorcery spell. Arclight Phoenix only triggers off actual cast, not copies, stuff like that. It's better than like the typical like trigger. It's not as busted as prowess. I think going forward, I'd be okay like with prowess just being replaced with Magecraft.
We're kind of seeing that with Hexproof, right? Like Hexproof is, I don't think we're ever going to see Hexproof again. I think it's going to be just Ward from now on. I think Ward's is just going to be the new replacement for Hexproof, which is, I think, in my opinion, way better.
Going forward, like having these better mechanics, when you're printing these new busted magic cards, is probably safer going forward anyway, so we don't end up with Eldraine again.
To be fair, prowess is just like a keyword almost, like first strike and stuff. And Magecraft normally has individual abilities. Prowess, the purpose of it is being just a keyword instead of having to give it a different ability for each card. So, I mean, there is a difference between them.
They call it like an evergreen ability, but they've also done that with like Metalcraft. There was cards once we got outside of Scars and Mirrodin, there was cards like in future sets. Aether Revolt, there was like a white dwarf, the Toolcrafter exemplar. He just had Metalcraft, but they didn't call it Metalcraft.
His ability without the keyword.
Three or more artifacts. Or +2/+0 in first strike he got if you had three or more artifacts.
Yeah, that thing is, it's just like a straight up, that's just Metalcraft, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Same thing with anything that says whenever you cast a non-creature spell, you like Monastery Mentor technically has two different prowess abilities. Because he has prowess and then he has the whenever you cast non-creature spell, create a monk with a 1/1 prowess, because that's not actually the prowess trigger.
I think that was a good job by them, like going into Magecraft, and they definitely didn't just make it like a watered down prowess. It's different, like Jeff was saying. It just has the copy abilities, where it has become a little bit problematic, but that kind of fell off the face of the earth, where the like Witherbloom Apprentice, small chain of small combos, those aren't really existing. Those exist more in EDH than anything now.
I think Magecraft was a good attempt at solving what prowess was. I do think they realized that they didn't intend for prowess to be triggered by your artifacts, enchantments, and planeswalkers.
So I know, Josh, you said earlier that if you had to kind of attack this deck or kind of look at the deck, not just itself, but is Urza's or Mishra's Bauble just way too strong?
I think it's just a consequence of homogeny right now. I think you have to play it to be competitive right now is what the problem is.
Isn't Mishra's Bauble just Gitaxian Probe, but like only looking at the top? Like, I get like looking at someone's hand is way different than the top. Like, that card got banned because you only had to pay 2 life to play it. It replaced itself. You looked at your opponent's hand. Isn't Mishra's Bauble technically like a different version of that? And it's free. You don't have to pay 2 life for it.
Right.
So when it comes to like Mishra's Bauble, it's a little different because it's a repeatable effect. So it's one of those things like with, if we combine with Lurrus, you're getting a Gitaxian Probe every turn. If you're combining it with Dragon Rage Channeler, enabling Delirium much easier, because if it lets us switch Mishra's Bauble into Gitaxian Probe in the Dragon Rage Channeler, you would still have to find either an enchantment or a different card to make it easier. Right now, it's just like, it's so easy to do that.
Oh, I agree. That's what I mean. Like, I think Mishra's Bauble is too good and does need to be banned. And I don't think getting rid of Mishra's Bauble actually destroys this deck either. It does slow it down, I think, a little, like a tad. It'll still be able to be played, and it won't be as overpowered using a card that just shouldn't be in the format. Like, we've learned through Magic's history that free spells are never good. They've never done anything good for a format. Yes, I get that Force of Will is good in Legacy and probably shouldn't be banned. It's still bad to, like, have a free spell. And Legacy is a format where it can deal with that versus Modern, where free spells are harder to deal with.
I think Force of Will keeps Legacy in check is what it
Agreed.
Is. Agreed. There's free spells that combo is the problem.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, Legacy is a format where they can deal with those free spells, like, versus Modern, where we don't have as many options. How do you start a turn one Bauble?
Nothing. I'm a Force of Vigor.
You could Force a Negation, and it would just cost you greatly. They spend zero mana, one card resource for your two cards. If they could start the game by saying, I cast a card, and you discard two cards of a game, everybody's going to play that card, right?
Oh, hell yeah. I mean, you could play Force of Vigor, but that's not even good enough either, because they just crack it in response. So, like, Force of Negation is, yeah, you don't want to discard two cards to exile a Mishra's Bauble, because then if they just play another one, you just feel terrible. Like, that's like a waste of a pact and or Force of Negation at that point.
Off the top of my head, though, I think if Mishra's Bauble were to go, you would see a build come up with like a Seal of Fire.
Seal of Fire or Tar Fire, one of the two.
Right.
Yeah, that would be the clear replacement, but I'm okay with that because you can't turn one Dragon Rage Channeler. So you can't go, like, this is the sequence. That's what's happening, which is kind of brutal. You go, like, Fetch Land, Dragon Rage Channeler into Mishra's Bauble, which triggers the Surveil. And if you hit an instant or sorcery, you then pitch that, and then all of a sudden you're, like, next turn you're guaranteed having a 3-3 flyer. Because you're going to have a sorcery or an instant in your hand to cast.
That almost seems more consistent than Delver's flipping.
It is almost. I'm the worst Delver flipper on the planet.
You just forget to check, and you just go, yeah, I like having a 1-1. I like
everything. No, I just fizzle. Like, I fail all the time. Like, all the time. I draw lands way more than anyone else that should ever.
That's why I think you're seeing a lot of lists just go completely away from Delver, right? Like, I think people are just done with the Delver list. If I had to take a list to get to, like, a GP today, it would be 4 Ragavan, 4 Murktides, 4 Dragon Rage Channeler, and then spells.
I like my list. If, like, I had to, like, put $50 down and, like, go play for 8 hours, I would probably play a stock first place list.
Yeah, for sure. Have we seen a better one drop than Delver? Like, and I'm only saying this, like, is Dragon Rage Channeler or even Ragavan better than Delver? Because I thought that wasn't possible, but I've kind of changed my tune on that.
I think Dragon Rage Channeler is definitely better. Like, the thing about Delver is like, yes, it has evasion, it flips, and it doesn't have to attack, but once it's a 3-2 flyer, all it can really do is beat. Dragon Rage Channeler still, like, surveils, which basically is, like, moving dead cards out of the way, which is, like, really good and gives you, like, better draws, hopefully, and isn't it a 3-3 instead of a 3-2?
Yes.
Which is actually a big difference in Modern with people playing like Fork Bolt and stuff like that.
Like me.
Or Stomp even. Like, it doesn't die to Stomp unless you kill it before it triggers. And you get more control. You get the same amount or less control, I guess, than you do with Delver. But I don't know. I think it's a better card. I don't think Ragavan is better than Delver because I think Ragavan is only as good as the cards you reveal. Like, yes, ramp good. It allows you to play your bigger stuff early, but, like, you could definitely just hit a bunch of lands from your opponent and, like, actually help them out.
The card is very good. It's undeniably good. You can't argue that, but it's definitely on. After playing it, I don't think it's bannable. It's very answerable.
So the three cards are all, I mean, we're seeing these pop up in Legacy more than now as well. And with the decks, like, they're three different one drops. Like, the one thing that's awesome about Delver that kind of beats Raghavan is it's got evasion, right? And then the thing that it beats, like, Dragon Rage Channeler is if, like, someone plays Rest in Peace, Dragon Rage Channeler is a joke. That card does nothing. It's a 1-1 that actively hurts you.
Agreed. Wait, does it actually actively hurt you if it's a 1-1?
No, you don't have to surveil into the graveyard.
Right, but it's just a 1-1 that has basically no text.
Right, it's just a 1-1.
Well, I'm definitely not saying Raghavan's bad. I don't think it's better than Delver.
Are we running into a problem? Because with the Demi-Lich coming out, are we going to just have like four different style blue-red decks?
Yep. I mean, you already have it. Like Phoenix has definitely like been popping up with Demi-Lich and stuff like that, which personally I'm excited for. But yeah, that's just...
A blue moon list. There's people that are just slamming.
Oh, playing mono blue?
Or just playing blue red blood moon too. Like Cryptic Command blood moon.
A lot of different red blue decks right now. But I think that's... This kind of comes back to the point you were trying to make earlier, Josh. And I was going to say I don't fully agree with is... I do agree a lot of people like red blue, but I feel like blue's probably one of the most hated colors in Magic. Like people will play it because like the cards in those colors are busted, but I feel like a lot of people don't actually like it. But these colors are being so pushed these days that like if you're not playing them, you're already at a disadvantage.
I'll give you that. I love that you agree that blue red is being pushed, and like I'm just saying, maybe I'm just speaking out of my knee behind about Wizards, knowing that they have the stats that blue-red's the favorite, so they're pushing the blue-red cards just like they did with the blue-green cards like a year ago or whatever with Oko and Uro, or not three years ago. It's definitely obvious that Wizards is pushing blue-red.
I mean, nothing's like a bigger statement. If we look at the Fastlands from Kaladesh, you have Spire Bluff Canals at $40, and then all the rest are under $6. They're also cheap.
Wow. Agreed. Now's the time to pick up the other fast lands. Don't pick up the originals because I have a feeling those are going to get reprinted.
Yeah, the Dark Slick Shores and the Black Cleave Cliffs. Right now, if you look at like land bases aside from the five Zendikar fetches, everything is just spiking through the roof. I mean, even Khaza Tarkir's fetch lands are like Pluto Deltas are $60.
What?
Yeah, they're pretty up there right now.
Oh my god, I traded away all my wooded foothills. What are they worth now?
Those are like $55.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, they're all the Windswept Heath one. I think the reason that one's the cheapest is because that one actually Flooded Strand could be the cheapest because that one has like it has more promos than the others do.
That the promos of Flooded Strand. I forgot about that. The white green one got printed in the event deck.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say too. That one got printed whatever event deck that came out during cons.
But so did Verdant Catacombs.
Burning Catacombs event deck, when was that? Was that in the modern one, or is that actually in the...
It was the modern event deck.
Okay, so those came at a premium. Like, an event deck now is, like, $30, right? So if I were to buy, like, a standard event deck, that's $30. The premium event decks, I thought they were $80.
Yeah.
I thought they were, like, $40 or $45 back when that came, because that was back in the second set of Mirrodin.
No, that was, like, original Zendikars when that came out.
No, that was... I don't think they had event decks then. They did... The first event deck was like a Stoneforge Mystic, right? That was...
Yeah.
Because they got banned. And the only way you could play Stoneforge Mystic was in that specific event deck. But I know for a fact, Verdant Catacombs was in that deck.
Please don't take any of the things I'm talking about from 6 years ago as a fact.
Agreed.
That's like 10 years ago. Zendikar came out in 2010. Do you guys think there's any way to like beat this deck? Because right now, it seems like people are adjusting to it, but... Like the numbers aren't changing. Where the amount of Urza Sagas, like, the meta has adjusted to that.
Did I have a hard time against? I had a hard time against Corsair Crucifix, and I had a hard time.
Don't you just kill that with the Unholy Heat?
Yes, that's how I beat it. But I was only playing two at the time because I only had two.
Fair.
I have a playset now.
I was gonna say all my answers to these decks are just red blue, so I don't like. Like, the first thing I thought of was Anger the Gods, which is red.
But also, the other card I had a problem with was the white-white protection from black, protection from red, gain a life whenever a creature enters the battlefield. Oriok Champion. I had a problem.
That's where the Murktide makes a fool out of that card, and so does Delver.
And Brazen Borrower. That's how I beat that card.
It's also like a 1-1 that doesn't fly. So your Dragon Rage Channeler flies and it is a 3/3. So you don't care. And it's not like you're casting 11 creatures. You're casting usually two. So you're like, yeah, you gain 2 life off your 1/1, but I have evasion. I'm just going to attack over you. And what are you going to hit me back for 1?
I didn't play against the Asmore deck. I feel like the Asmore deck might give me problems because it can give just shoot down your creatures a bunch. I don't know. When I was playing that deck, I felt like very ahead every game.
What would you say the strongest card was? Was it the Dragon Rage Channeler that was like, if you just turn 1 then, just started getting that going, were you unbeatable?
Rest of Iteration was the best card.
I totally forgot about that card. That card is such a house. It's 2 mana draw 3.
Yeah, it was Expressive Iteration was the best card. It pulled you back in. It like put you way ahead. It just did everything. Gave you your land drops. It helps turn on your Delirium because it's a sorcery. It gives you it does so much, and they're not gonna ban that card.
I know every time I play that card, I struggle knowing when to cast it. I know before we were recording, I had stated that I was kind of happy with the Brainstorm ban in Historic because I always have problems trying to figure out how to sequence my spells, having like Opt and Faithless Looting in my hand. I have that problem with Expressive all the time, like, because like I feel like playing it turn 2 is bad because like if you hit 2 lands, like, all right, well, now I just like discarded a card to draw 1 card. But like there's plenty of times like on turn 3 or 4 where I'm like, I don't know, should I cast this or this? There's a lot of decisions with that card, but that card is very good because you're tucking something, putting something in your hand, and exiling something that they can't touch for that turn.
I was never casting that card on turn 2. Yeah, that's like a turn 3 play.
Well, that's what I said. It's never a turn 2 play.
Mm-hmm. I was playing Sprite Dragon on turn 2 is what I was doing, personally. I'm sure there's a million things you can be doing.
I mean, you got Murktide, you got Storming Entity, you have what's the dragon? You just Sprite Dragon. You have Delver. You have all the one common thing with all of these decks is Mishra's Bauble and Dragon Rage Channeler. Those are the number one thing that's in common with all of them. Whereas the other pieces kind of come and go. It's like kind of what is your flavor? Do you love Delver? Play the Delver version. Do you like Storming Entity and Metamorphose? Play that one. I mean, those two cards you're going to see in all those lists, but all the other ones are kind of interchangeable, which makes it difficult from like a sideboarding standpoint for any deck. Like, oh, I got to bring in Rest in Peace. Oh, wait, he's got Storming Entity. Crap, and not Murktide. I'm going to get blown out.
Do you think there's one that's better than all of the rest?
The one that was just 12 creatures, the 4 Ragavan, 4 Murktide, 4 Dragon Rage Channeler. I think that's the best list. With 4 Archmage Charm, I think that's the best list if you ever asked me.
Yeah, I like that list the best too, just because I think having access to cards like Spell Pierce and Archmage's Charm, because Cauldron Complete kind of came and went with cards like Archmage's Charm. If you're a Stoneforge player, you should really know better and not get the Cauldron Complete, because they'll use the Archmage's Charm to steal the germ and you'll never have 7 mana to re-equip it. And you're just like, I'll smash you with your own 5/5 over and over and over.
That's so gross. You can do the same thing if they play Batterskull too.
Well, Batterskull, they'll have the mana to bring it back, right? Because the bounce on Batterskull is
3.
So you can actually stop that. The equipped on Cauldron, like if you get your Cauldron Complete stolen from you, and if you're not playing like a Pure Steel Paladin deck, you are not re-equipping it, and they're going to smash you with that 5/5 over and over.
And they're stealing it either when you attack or the end of your turn, so then they get to attack with it right away before you can re-equip it.
Yeah, it's not a good feeling when you're like, you don't even get to cast, you're like, oh, I'll cheat it in, and they just like, they shrug. All right, yeah, I move to attacks. Like, yeah, Archmage Charm, steal it. You're like, oh my god, this is so brutal. So usually in those matchups, like against the Delver matchup or the blue-red list, like if you're on a Stoneforge list, I highly advise you to take out Cauldron Complete unless you're going against the Prowess list.
I personally am not playing any counter spells in mine.
Not even on the board?
In the board, I have Mystical Disputes.
Your list is a little odd because the list that you were describing to me, it has Sprite Dragon, but not Metamorphose. And I thought you weren't playing Metamorphose because I thought you had Counterspell. So it's a little weird that, I mean, it's obviously working, right? The list that you're playing. But I think Metamorphose would just bring your deck from 56 cards to 52.
As we were talking about it, I was like, oh, I should probably look at Metamorphose for this list that I have. Because like I don't like playing Gutshot and all that other stuff. But I kind of do because it did pay off a bunch of times when I was playing. So I liked Gutshot because you get to slam down the turn to Stormwing Entity, and that always feels really good.
You better pick up your Metamorphoses now, man. They're up to like $8.
I'm fine paying $8 for that card. But with the Gutshot, I love Gutshot on the draw. I hate it on the play. On the draw, I feel so good with it because they can go like Ragavan. You're like, all right, I'll shoot it downward, whatever. I'll page your life and kill it. It's basically a mental misstep against those cards.
Yeah, that's how I feel. Like, I also sideboard it out almost like immediately. It's always the first card I sideboard out. So I like what I'm doing. Would I play it at a $50 5K or something? Probably. I don't know. I would probably stick to the stats.
My overall like thought on it, 20% or 18%, it may not sound that big of a number, but if we look at like 20% at like a large level tournament, you're gonna be playing that deck once every 5 rounds, which seems pretty like unlikely. But normally what ends up happening is you play a random deck round one, you play that round two and you beat it, you play something else round three, and then rounds four through to top eight is usually just delver or a blue red.
I wonder what the paper stats would look like.
Yeah, I mean, I think so many people would be on that list. And if I were to build a deck, I would just try to gear it to beat those decks. And I've even considered playing like some kind of rest in peace main deck. I don't know what it would be, but I would like to try something.
But if you're like an Amulet Titan player, are you spending all the money to pick up all the blue red cards right now?
That's the thing about Modern. People don't really shift as quickly as possible. It's not like Standard where it's like you get your mana base in Standard, which is pretty cheap. Here's the thing about Modern. If you don't have your set of fetches and your shocks, you're gonna have a hard time like playing the format.
Right. I only have enough. I can only play anything that's blue, red, and Modern right now. Besides, like, I'm working towards getting like as Morana, Mardukai, Destina, Kuldakar cards, but I could have the only 60 cards I could sleep up right now would be blue, red.
If there's any advice I can give to anybody who's playing Magic or starting to play Magic, or anybody who started in the last 2 years, the number one thing you can do is go and get your land base. So go and get your 40 fetches, go and get your 40 shocks, go and get probably with your fast lands, you probably don't need to go and get all 40 of them, but you're probably going to need some blue red ones. And then with the Triomes, which are pretty nice, which are staying at a high price for what they are, those are all a bunch of one-offs. I don't see any decks playing like multiple of the same Triome, so those are kind of nice.
If you have your land base, you can play anything you want.
I mean, aside from like the land base in Modern, the most expensive cards after that are Force of Negation, which is getting out of hand, which kind of sucks, which I think they're at like 100 right now. And then the Ragavan, any format that's playing that it's legal in is getting played in.
I don't think Ragavan's that all that. It's a very good card, but I don't think dominant.
The mana ramp with it is like really good.
You look at like Ragavan, and so the argument was Splinter Twin, right? Splinter Twin was a problem for Modern because of how deck construction had to be. You had to be able to always answer the twin. So that means you had to play cards like Abrupt Decay or even cards like Slaughter Pack or have a counterspell, which completely altered the game where if you weren't prepared for Splinter Twin, you were just going to lose. Ragavan is kind of doing that where it's if I go turn one Ragavan and you go turn one Amulet, I'm going to beat your head in.
Right, I guess.
Especially with
bad play pattern, because that's the new buzzword for Wizards banning. Is it an unhealthy play pattern to jam a Ragavan on turn one and not and cast your opponent's deck?
I mean, it's a bad play pattern anytime that if you're not playing certain cards, you're just going to lose. That's not a good format. That's not a healthy format. That means that you have to play these cards. Like, yes, you can make a rogue deck that maybe is really good against this deck, but then the problem with that is when you play those random other like decks that are still in the format, like the Stoneforge deck or Amulet Titan, you just lose because you have no answers to them. Being forced to play a certain deck is not healthy for a format.
On the contrary, though, like with Wizards, with all how much product comes out every year and how Wizards has shown that they're just going to keep printing more and more great Magic cards. Is it like necessary to ban, or should we just wait and see what cards come in the next set and see if that answers the problem?
With Fetchlands, so let's pretend that Fetchlands were out of the format. If this was like a Pioneer-esque format, it would feel a lot safer, right? But because it's Fetchlands, any card that they print, unless it's specifically like wastes that need waste mana, you can usually splash it. And we saw that with Arkham's Astrolabe being able to make five color soup, right? They're just like, let's put the 60 best cards together. And then when we got to like blue red decks. I mean, in Modern, it shouldn't be easy to just be able to slam Omnath decks all day, but there's no consequence for playing Omnath. Like, Blood Moon used to be the answer, or even, I guess there's no, like, natural wasteland to keep the, those decks in check, but you can just kind of go crazy. Whereas in Pioneer, if like some people's like Esper is hard to pull off in Pioneer because you're going to take such a beating off your Shocklands, and there's no Triumph for Esper right now. There is a Triumph for like Sultai, just when it comes to like that style, when you don't have Fetchlands, it really limits your capability of what you're able to play. You can't really play all five colors. Like if we look at Legacy, how many blue-white decks splash a single Volcanic just for Red Elemental Blast out of the sideboard?
Oh my gosh, it's like unreal how many decks do that.
So when you print cards and the power level of like Red Elemental Blast, it's like a complete sideboard hoser. If you have a fetch land, you have access to it. There's just no doubt to it. So when it comes to Modern, we're kind of seeing that blue, it was before blue green, and they kicked out the blue green cards, and then there was no blue esque decks for the time being, and then we saw the Delver come out. Well, there's Grixis versions of it, and I'm sure give it some time, and there's going to be a rug version of it with Placed Armorglyph. I'm sure we're going to see iterations that are contorting to what the meta is going to be, and I don't want to see a meta where it's just like, what's your Dragon Rage Channeler deck plus whatever, because that's what we saw with Splinter Twin. Splinter Twin was straight blue-red, and then 1 week it went from blue Jeskai and then Jeskai to Grixis, because the Grixis version was like, I'm going to play Tasigur, or the Jeskai version is I'm going to play Lightning Helix or Path.
Earlier in the day, a hero was saying maybe they should unban Splinter Twin since Modern is just like free-for-all right now, because it probably deserves a second chance, but maybe not because Blue-Red's already really good.
But is Modern actually a free-for-all right now?
I went to FNM. I played five different decks every, or four different decks every.
Yeah, but FNM isn't the meta that like you're talking about when you're talking about a meta of a format. FNM is where you go and have fun. Like, yes, there are competitive FNMs. Yes, our FNMs we go to have competitive people. A format's normally defined by like challenges and like GPs and stuff like that. Granted, we don't have that for paper yet, but
that's why I was
18% is a lot, and that means again you are going to see it one every five, one every four rounds, and I'm sure. Because like you even said, the 18% was specifically red, blue, aggro. So I'm sure there's some decks they don't even put in there like to calculate. So that the percentage is actually probably a little higher. I don't know. I just don't like that for the format. I'm not calling for like any red, blue cards to be banned. Dragon Rage Channeler is very powerful. I don't like playing against it, but I don't think it should be banned. I do believe Mistress Bauble should be. And I think it would help out a lot.
No doubt, in my mind, do I think that Mishra's Bauble would be the card to pick from, to start, would be the safe card to pick. It should have been gone a while ago anyway. All the free spells, again, are bad. I have no doubt in my mind that card should go. But I will say this morning when I there was leaks that there is going to be a ban announcement, I was definitely sweating.
Hey Josh, can I ask you, when you go to FNMs, how many people do you think are on the blue-red deck there? Like, let's say there's a 30-man FNM. What would you say? How many people do you see playing that deck? Because when the last FNMs I've gone to, it was like when Urza Saga was the problem. It's like I played Urza Saga twice, three times every FNM. And then now I haven't gone to an FNM, a modern FNM, since like the Delver takeover or the blue-red takeover. How many decks are you seeing with blue-red all over the place?
When I went last time, which was not this week because this week was the pre-release, I was the only blue-red player there, and there was 23 players.
2 weeks ago when I went to FNM, I definitely remember counting, like, six or seven red-blue players. They were all different variants, too. Like, some were playing, like, a Jeskai blue-red, like, where they were splashing white for Lightning Helix. Primarily, they were definitely playing Murktide, Dragon Rage Chandler, Ragavan. They're just different versions. Maybe it's calmed down. Maybe those people weren't there the last 2 weeks.
I had two people tell me that they played that deck. They were quote unquote. I played that deck last week and I got wrecked. So I'm playing something else this week. So maybe it was just an off week. But I'm interested to see what I'm going to take a look and do some stats this week when I go.
Hope I can get out because I haven't been able to like with my time. I haven't been able to play like much MTGO. So normally I was jamming on there, and when I was jamming on MTGO, I saw a lot of Urza Sagas, and then now at the FNM level, I'd like to see where that is. Also, some of the prices have come down, which is kind of nice. I think the people who wanted Ragavans got them, and then Urza Saga is not as expensive as everybody thought it was going to be. Anything else you guys want to add?
I think we hit out the blue-red archetype out of the park today.
Ban.
Stop talking about any cards in my deck, please.
No, ban Bauble. Your deck will survive.
give it like two more weeks, and I'm gonna hope that the format adjusts. But we are fortunate enough that in the Midwest here, that Nerd Rage Gaming is actually going to be doing 3 big tournaments or 5Ks. One, I think there's one in October, one in November, and one in December. The one in October, I believe, is that the team one or is that the November one?
That's the November one, the one during Thanksgiving weekend.
That's a brutal one to do with teams, but November we got Modern. October we have Modern. November we have Teams, which is, it's really weird not to have Pioneer part of that team. And then in December we have Legacy in Milwaukee.
I love it. I
had to all 3.
The October date couldn't have fallen on a better weekend for me. It like slotted right into the one weekend I had open, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is perfect. So yes, I will be at all 3 of those events.
Yeah, I'd love to go to the Teams one, but it being on Thanksgiving weekend is just like, oh, come on, man.
As of right now, Jeff is my Modern team player and I'm his Legacy team player.
And Antonio's our Limited player.
We're hoping to get Antonio on the podcast one of these days.
I should bring him on. The only thing I'm preparing for now, because the only thing I'm going to be able to play in is the Legacy one. So all my focus has just been completely turned from Modern to Legacy. So I'm going to just, in the upcoming weeks, I'm going to start slamming a bunch of Legacy decks.
I love Legacy. Legacy is my favorite format. I remember I brought my Legacy deck to FNM to switch over to Modern. I left it there, so I should probably give it a little more love than I gave it in the last 2 weeks.
All right, guys. As always, I got a question of the week. If you were stranded on an island for the rest of your life, what is the one cuisine you would like to eat for the rest of your time?
Smoothies.
A cuisine.
What's a cuisine?
Food, like Italian food, Chinese food.
Oh.
You ever heard of that sweet dieting product, Lean Cuisine? Don't you know anything?
Got him.
I was like, well, like if a smoothie doesn't count, then what's a cuisine? I guess it's like a food.
What style of food would you want to eat for the rest of your life? I guess for me, it would be Mexican food for the rest of my life.
I feel like that would be the smartest choice. I feel like Italian food, it's too many carbs, man.
Right. I would probably go with Mexican food too. That's easy. I like Chinese food or like Oriental food or like.
I was gonna say like Japanese would probably be my like ramen and stuff like that.
I like it, but I think it's just too much sometimes. I think Latin American food is just so good, like all around.
Yeah, you got tacos, burritos, nachos, Taco Bell. You got it all.
Taco Bell. That's not real.
Or even like, I like elote. I like it all, man.
Elote. Esquite.
Mole.
Like Mexican street corn.
Yeah, it's called esquite.
No, that's elote.
For me being Italian, I don't like Italian food. I like pizza, and I'm not talking like chain pizza. I do like a nice Italian, like to go to like an Italian restaurant and get like a thin crust, like onions and anchovies, which nobody eats anchovies except me, but like pasta and like chicken parm, that stuff can kiss my ass.
Right.
Yeah, I do like actual traditional pizza where it's like the dollops of mozzarella instead of it being like shredded. Oh man, now you're just making me hungry.
Yeah, I always make cookies.
You have a question?
Yeah, what land cycle do you want to see in Innistrad?
I'd be cool with the other Tango lands.
I want them to replant the fast lands.
Well, I mean, I didn't understand your question. I thought you meant like, what cycle did we want like that hasn't been printed? Because the Tango lands, and if anyone doesn't know what I mean by that, those are the lands where they come into play tapped unless you control 2 basics and they're searchable with fetches.
Right.
We're missing the other half of that cycle. I don't know, more Triomes would be cool.
That was my second opinion, was the rest of the Triomes, but I want them to reprint the fast lands. But
they're gonna hold off on the Triomes until probably when we go to Alara, if we're ever going back to Alara. I don't know why they haven't gone and revisit that plane. Did that plane suck or something? That was this plane I got in on. I have a real affinity towards that set. Do people hate that, like that plane?
I liked it. I thought the plane was destroyed is the big thing.
I don't think so. I think it's still around.
So I thought, didn't Nicobolas take all of the shard? And that's why in Alara Reborn, like everything was multicolor.
Let me get in some nerd stuff for you. So the original Alara plane, they had like those border posts, remember? And those border posts separated the magic. So if you lived in Esperland or whatever you want to call it, you had no knowledge of green or red magic. It just didn't exist. And that's like, that's why they're the shards of Alara. Conflux is like when Nico Bolas is being a real dick and he's combining all of it and smashing it together. And then we have Alara Reborn, which is the new plane of Alara where everything's 100% multicolor because all of the colors have just been smashed together.
Johnny Vengeance, the concept behind that was as he was a white planeswalker and then he got outcasted and that's the first time he planeswalked and he ended up meeting Sarkhan and Sarkhan taught him red magic.
You ever heard of Lightning Helix Sun?
Yep.
I loved that set. I would love to go revisit that.
It was fun. Alara Reborn sucked to draft. I hated doing that, but the rest of it was really good. Like the art, the cards were awesome. Like that was one of my favorite standards with that and Zendikar.
Planeswalkers were still new, so like Elspeth was like out of this world, like mind blowing.
All of them were start, like all of them saw play. Even well, Nicol Bolas didn't really because it cost too much. But
Tezzeret fundamentally changed Magic.
I mean, if they could take another crack at Alara, and Alara, the draft format sucked because they weren't really focusing on limited because of how limited things were structured. It was like, remember, big set, small set, small set. And the way that you used to do it, remember, it used to be 3 packs of shards. And then the next set would be 2 packs of shards, 1 conflict. And then it would be all 3 of them together. And that was kind of like how the draft format was. Go back and revisit like Cons of Tarkir. They did it perfectly. And the reason they did that so well is because at the common slot, you can get all 10 of the lands. They had all 10 of those to come into play tap lands, which so that fixes everybody's mana base problems. And they also had Morph in that set. And Morph makes it so like if you get stuck on 2 colors, at least you can still morph your cards. So when you do hit that 3rd color, you can flip them up and then do big effects, right? Yeah. Whereas if Shards of Alara, I drafted that set. And I think it was on Magic Online like a couple years ago or whatever year they did it. They went through the entire modern draft format. Like every other week, it was a brand new one. I went from like 8th edition up. So I drafted everything. And Alara block was abysmal. It is so bad.
Agreed. Like when I had mentioned it, like I enjoyed drafting those sets because back then, like I was still a little newer to Magic. I wasn't fully playing competitive. I didn't get into like full swing competitive until like Zendikar. But I just remember I felt like Alara Reborn like ruined the draft. It made it so difficult that, and like you were saying with Cons, you had morphs. You didn't have morph and Reborn, so all those multicolored spells just sat in your hand and did nothing. They did add a lot of hybrid cards, I'll give them that, but I don't know. The format itself was fun, but we'll see. Like maybe we will go back to Alara, maybe we won't. I'm still waiting for us to go back to Lorwyn and Kamigawa.
I think we are going to go. I think there's going to be, I thought there was a league on Kamigawa. Wasn't there like, maybe that was just some Redditor being like.
There was something about.
I thought, isn't Kamigawa like one of the most like, not hated sets, but like least like played and opened or something like that?
So underpowered and everybody quit Magic after Mirrodin.
Lorwyn
was beautiful. That set was amazing.
For me, the timing of Kamigawa turned like right into like puberty, so like my interests like in Magic went down and my interests in girls went like extremely up, so like that's kind of like when I just stopped playing Magic. It was like the timing of Kamigawa is what really ruined it for me.
But I just didn't want anything to do with Ninja. He was just looking for kisses,
right?
Hey man, Ninja steal kisses.
I feel like that might have been the same for a lot of Magic players. Like they entered into like their teenage years and their interests diverged a little bit.
Yeah, I didn't get into Magic till I was 18, so I had all my kisses all stored up. I was ready to roll.
I mean, I've been speaking as a Magic player that started when he was like 8 years old.
That's a cast. We are on Facebook. Give us a like and listen. And you can see all of our posts. We'll always get the newest post on there. Or that's the easiest way to find us. When our new episode comes out, is through Facebook or Twitter. Feel free to send us questions at paperplayerpodcast@gmail.com if you feel free to do that. I did check. We got nothing again. So
like, subscribe. Congratulations to the Milwaukee Bucks on their NBA championship.
He played Yu-Gi-Oh! For a long time.
Sounds a lot like me.
Sounds like most of us.
I've always been good at Magic. I've never been bad. That's you guys only.
Uh-huh, sure.
I've never lost a game to skill. It's always been to luck.
I'm pretty sure I've won both the FNMs I've gone to in the last month.
Weird how I wasn't there.
I know, right? Both times.